Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, the time. Jay Foreman, man, I remember when I first heard that he was emerging on the scene at Eden Prairie High School. And late 80s, early 90s, Mike Grant was just taking the job, I believe, as football coach there about the same time. And by some coincidence, I think maybe Mike's father might have mentioned to Chuck, hey, you might want to have your son take a look at Eden Prairie before he decides what high school to go to. And the rest is history, but he's in studio with us. Jay, how are you? Do I have that pretty much right?
You got it right, man. I think it was, a leap of faith and good luck. You know, Coach Grant was just getting to town in Eden Prairie, missed him the first year, and, he turned it around overnight and was lucky enough to, to get in there my senior year. And, it was probably, one of the best decisions I made just because, we put a lot of trust in each other. You know, he was, he had a lot of pressure on him coming in as Bud's son. And I, obviously lived my whole life as Chuck's son. You know, it's my senior year. I want to go to big school, play football, a good match. And, he taught me a lot. And then really a lot of the, the foundation fundamentals that, he instilled in me, even though he didn't think I was probably listening at the time, stuck with me for to this day.
Well, you were a running back in the day. Did you think you'd play running back in college? Did Nebraska say to you, hey, we want you as a linebacker? How'd it go down?
Well, it was funny. I automatically through sports or through football, you're Chuck Foreman's son, you're running back.
Yeah.
So I played it, ever since I was in Pee Wee
football.
They
didn't even ask you, right?
They didn't even ask me. It was just like, hey, you just line up over there. You can, play running back in your sleep. And, Coach Osmer said, you're good enough to play running back at Nebraska. That he was, went the whole thing. The weights would probably help me get faster and stronger. He's like, but we have six guys on scholarship. All of them are good.
Who were some of them back then?
Lawrence Phillips was just coming.
Was he
up.
Your age or was he a little older?
A year older. Okay. He was a true freshman the year that they lost to Florida State and was obviously an emerging star. So he was, the bell cow. You had Clinton Childs, Damon Benning. Marvin Sims, who was from Apple Valley.
He transferred to Northern Iowa.
Right, he transferred the year I got there, but I saw him. We kind of crossed over together. And then they brought in Amon Green. And then
Amon was here then, huh?
Well, the next year.
Okay.
So they were stacked. And then they had a guy named Jay Sims, who was just as good as all of them, but you never heard of him. And so you had five guys there that were legit. And then on top of, the Otter and walk-on. And so he's like, hey, the thing they liked about me is that I could, score the football. And, their next position was wingback, which is their quote-unquote, in quotations, their wide receiver. And I looked at the stats. I'll never forget this. And, their leading receiver had, 37 catches. So I said, hey, coach, I knew they were a running team. And to be honest, I didn't know much about Nebraska, except for they were making a magical run that year. He's like, well, the wingbacks, are a big part in our run game. And
which means you're a blocker.
Blocker. And I asked him, and he's like, cut blocking, and I didn't know what that means. And he explained it to me, and then I looked over at my dad and said, no, I'm not going to college, to roll on the ground, catch 36 passes, and they think I'm good. And then I wanted to play safety. And the same thing at running back that there was safety. There was Mike Minner. Toby Wright just left. Eric Stokes. John Reese. Eric Warfield, those guys, all next level guys went and played long time and at the next level. And they were just kind of switching to that kind of Florida State, smaller linebacker, outside linebackers, one big thumper in the middle, kind of, speed guys.
Run on the edges.
Right on the edges. And, they liked my frame. I was, skinny as a pencil, but you never lifted weights before. And
they knew they could develop that.
Yep. And it was a good opportunity. I had two seniors that started that year. I redshirted. I dedicated myself to get bigger, faster, and stronger, and started out that spring. The following year, number 8th on the depth chart, walked out of spring starting, and the rest was history.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it was, I always tell people, you're always going to get a couple opportunities in football, and you know, you got to be good, you got to be lucky, but then also you got to be prepared for it. And I prepared because I saw early on the guys ahead of me, even though they were on campus longer, lacked, you know, they had deficiencies, you know, whether it was on the field, off the field, in the classroom.
You knew well what they were about.
Yeah, and I knew if I had opportunity. One thing I knew showing up at Nebraska, or if I showed up at any other college, I knew football better than 99% of those guys. I've watched it so many times. I was a ball boy for the Vikings. I was in the meetings, saw how they prepared for the game. So the big moments weren't that big for me because I, you know, I saw guys go out there and play for the profession mm-hmm. on the sidelines. I saw how quick the game was, and I saw, you know, how guys prepared. I mean, heck, you know, this torn ligament here was me and Chris Carter going at it one-on-one at training camp, and he pinned my what I thought was a good drive against the backboard and got my hand caught.
This is basketball.
Basketball.
Whoa.
You know, in between games, you know, I was just happy to be playing. You know, I thought I was an AAU star. Didn't even know Chris Carter was a really good basketball player, but we were going at it. But they taught me, and he taught me there how to be tough, how to compete. You know, I didn't let him know he hurt me. But then, you know, I played against him years later. And so, you know, I knew going in there, I knew football, and I seen so many games, watching it with my dad, watching it with my grandfather, uncles, even my grandma, she knew games. So I knew that part was going to be easy. Dedicating myself was going to be easy. Now just getting caught up to speed physically was the hardest part for me, and I had to dedicate a whole season.
What is it? We hear about Nebraska's weight program,
right.
And it's renowned nationally for people not familiar.
Right.
Probably, you know, teams I'm sure have caught up.
Yeah.
But at one time, Nebraska was the elite for weight training.
Right.
What did that mean? What was that like?
And it was elite on all levels,
mm-hmm.
professionally and even Olympic guys.
So that's where you went to find out how to lift weights.
Right, yeah, and it was, you know, it was intense. It was, you know, they had this thing called the circuit. So it was you had to do 10 reps within 60 seconds, and there's 75% of your max and going up, and you stop at 85. So you go 75, 80, 85 within 60 seconds. So if you're doing squats and say your max is 315,
okay.
275 10 times, and if it
takes
you,
break.
If it takes you 45 seconds, you got 15 seconds rest.
I see. So 60 seconds before you, from the start to the you start
right.
again.
And they had a timer, and it went off. And
whoa.
And so that was 6 weeks where they kind of break your body down. Then towards the end, they build you up. And then you go through the second phase, which is kind of, you know, more building endurance and somewhat strength. And then you go to the full-fledged, you know, heavy lifting. But what really set it apart was the atmosphere and the culture that they set as far as how we ran. And how we pushed each other, because everybody worked out together, every position group worked out together, and every position group challenged each other. And, you know, they did the Olympic lifts. We lifted hard off season, fall camp, and during the season. Coach Osmer used to say, like, look, during spring ball and the off season, that's going to win us our first quarter of the season. Fall camp is going to be the middle part. During the season is going to set us apart in the third and fourth quarter, in the third and fourth quarter of the season. So that's really where they set it apart. And they went and they were always adding different stuff. They were, you know, we would mix in hand cleans and clean and jerks. And then we had the, you know, Cybex machines to really test your.
So are you doing this workout and it's almost cardiovascular at the same time? So
both.
That when you're done, you're just exhausted?
Exhausted. There would be guys throwing up. There would be guys just laying on the ground. And then on top of you got to run hard. So
after?
We ran 4 days a week and lifted hard 4 days a week.
So you were in just unbelievable shape.
And then of course.
How long did it take you to transform your body?
Oh, that first year. I mean, when I showed up there, I probably was like 185, 190. Never
were
lifted,
you that light coming
yeah,
in?
Yeah, if that. You know, never lifted weights.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest thing is I wanted to pass the running test.
Yep.
You know, because I didn't want to show up there and then, hey, we gave you a scholarship. And at least you could do is be in shape.
Yep.
And so, you know, and then once I, you know, after my first redshirt year and then going through spring ball, I got up to about, you know, 200, you know, and it was a good solid 200. Mm-hmm. But I had to work at it. You know, I ate pizza late at night.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
What a gift you have back
right,
then, right?
Protein
Go
shakes.
Go eat some
and all
pizza
that.
Late at night, yeah.
You know, any weight that I could get on myself, I felt like I needed because that was the only thing holding me back. And I felt like I was going to burn so many calories and I was working so hard, it would just turn into lean muscle. So, and then I was lifting extra hard.
And matter of fact,
I would lift another day on Sunday.
To get the edge?
Yeah, because I figured if I did 4 Sundays, you know, a month for 8 months, I got an extra month's worth of lifting
yep.
than my competition. Didn't tell anybody. It was on my own little secret. Now, how much did it help me? I don't know, but I know mentally I felt like
it didn't hurt you, right?
I had the edge, and I felt like, you know, a whole nother lift as far as upper body and building
endurance. Did you sneak into the weight room on your own?
Yeah, well, I used to go over to the rec center, which had a phenomenal weight room. I mean, the rec center's weight room was just as good as college weight rooms back then. And so I used to go over there and get after it. Get after it about, you know, 8 in the morning, leave at 10. Then I'd eat all day, you know, watch, you know, football, Sunday football or whatever was on TV, and then that's where it took off. But the weight program, you know, the squats, you know, the heavy squats 2 days a week, the cleans and stuff like that. And one of the goals was to be lifter of the year. And, you know, I got that. I won that, you know.
Did you do it?
Yeah, by my senior year. And it was like a plaque that, you know, they had a platform probably as big as this desk here. And they put, you know, they had the trophies up there. And then they would have everybody that was lifter of the year through the years. And only people that were either up for lifter of the year or won it could step foot on it, sit on it, get on it, talk about it. So it was kind of a pride thing. And, you know, when you want to, you know, you have certain goals that you see from people that was ahead of you that you want to try to either get or exceed. And that was one of them. You kind of always want to leave your mark on the program. And I kind of felt, you know, that was a good start for me. It really helped me. It gave me confidence. You know, I felt like the stronger my legs were, the less I was going to be susceptible to like a, you know, major knee injury. I felt like
You just hit on it though. Yeah. I mean, what kids don't realize that in terms of lifting, yes, it's about getting stronger, but the confidence that you get when you see growth is unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. You know, I stepped on that field my freshman year, redshirt freshman year, knowing that I was physically ready. So once you know you're physically ready,
now you don't have to think about it.
Mentally, you're already there because I gained mental strength from all the work that I did in the weight room. So it kind of works hand in hand.
And you weren't worried about a running back running you over?
I wasn't worried about that.
You didn't even think about it.
Nope. I got my head beat in as a true freshman by the best fullback, blocking fullback in Nebraska history, Corey Schlesinger, who played 12 years in the league. I had Lawrence Phillips coming through there, and I took my lumps, and I kept coming back. And there was days I wanted to quit, but I always answered the bell. But then as the season went on, I was getting stronger during the season. And then I started to be able to hold my own. And then once I got the head start in the weight room, it took off pretty quick.
When we come back, we'll ask Jay Foreman about those days when you feel like quitting, because everybody does, and what allowed him to push through when many don't. Stay with us on Sports to the Mat. Welcome back, Jay Foreman in the studio from Eden Prairie, the University of Nebraska, to a successful career in the NFL. I've never asked you this question. Was it hard to be Chuck Foreman's son?
At times. At times it was. I mean, it was a... I won't say identity crisis, but you were always trying to make an identity for yourself. So as a young athlete, a young guy that's really trying to make his way, it was hard. It was something I struggled with because everywhere I went, you're Chuck Foreman's son. No matter
And you look like him and you're playing
like
football.
Right, look like I'm out there on the field. You know, no matter what I did on the field, man, that was a good play. But I remember when your dad did this for the Vikings, X, Y, and Z.
When did you get to an age where you realized just how good he was? You know, as opposed to just hearing about him, really understanding it from a football player standpoint.
Well, I knew going, you know, when I was in high school, I realized he was good, but then was, you know, he still was dad to me. College, kind of like the same thing. But once I got into the NFL, went against Marshall Faulk, he telling me how good my dad was, other guys telling me that. Then you meet some more, you know, at that time, retired guys that went against him, watched him play. Then I started to prepare myself and then start to see some of the things that he was doing back in the 70s that guys couldn't even do in the late 90s and 2000, then you realize how good he was. Then you start to see, like, when you meet Roger Craig and he's telling me, like, you know, your dad was the first one to ever do this, and I patterned myself after him. He was my hero, you know, and all these guys. And so then you realize...
That's pretty big stuff.
Yeah, then you realize, like, you know, and this is what I was just saying earlier today, is, like, you know... Take all the bias out. I can evaluate my dad on a, you know, just looking at, you know, his career and how he was as a player without being biased. Like, he really trendsetted the league, you know.
Oh, yeah, they didn't guys catching the ball in the backfield like that.
People think that the West Coast offense started out in San Fran. It started here.
Yeah.
You know, started
Jerry
with
Burns.
Jerry Burns. And that's the funny
and
thing.
And because of Chuck Foreman.
Yeah. And so when you think
and
about
Fran
it.
And Fran Tarkenton recognizing that they had something here to.
Right. And, you know, he's still the fastest guy to 50 touchdowns. And. In four less games, because they were playing 12 or 14, or at least two or four less games
yeah.
a season. and that was back in 1972. I mean, you know, 72, you know, 75. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive.
I saw him not that long ago at the health club, and he was working out. How's his health?
He's getting better. And, you know, the last couple of years have been a little bit of a struggle, but he's almost, I wouldn't say out of the clear, but he's almost to where he's back to, you know, his normal self. And, you know, he's been working at it. And, you know, he's a type 2 diabetic, so it's kind of like an everyday thing. But, you know, he's tackled it pretty good, and he's still competitive. So, you know, he's gonna tackle it.
And that working out helps
working
a lot.
Out, yeah, and so – and he's always done that. I think, you know, with my dad, with his diabetes, has been a lot of, you know, I wouldn't say dumb luck, just kind of just odd situations. You know, a little cut here, somehow gets infected, boom, it turns into something bigger. But he's, you know, he's got a good handle on it. He works at it. And, you know, just like any other thing that he's done in his life, he's, you know, he's gonna you know, meet it head on and come out victorious.
Wasn't your mother a sprinter too, or an athlete as well?
Yeah, my mom was. And I always joke with my dad.
This ain't fair, baby. Yeah. This ain't fair.
My dad was a world-class athlete.
Yep.
My mom was a good athlete. I'm supposed to be Randy Moss. Like, I shouldn't have had to work this hard. You know, my mom's almost 6 feet. My dad's, you know, close to 6'3". You know, I'm barely 6'2". You know, what happened?
Yeah.
But, you know.
But they gave you enough.
It gave me enough. And you know, my dad, you know, taught me a lot of things about football. But my mom, you know, that's where I get the true, like, laser focus and competitive, kind of cutthroat type of competitor. My mom's very competitive. Like, she doesn't let you win at anything. And so I had the perfect match, you know. And then my dad was always that backbone for me, that where whenever I needed him, he was there. And whenever, you know, I needed to bounce things off him, you know, he always kind of always was there to, you know, get me an answer, change my mindset, but then push me at the same time. So it was very unique in that type of environment to have somebody like that.
Now, you've penned a book, right?
Yeah, I did. You know, it just came out of nowhere. I think people were asking been asking for a couple years just what it's like to grow up with my dad, what it was like to, you know, take a leap of faith out of Minnesota. I mean, you know, before me, I think the only other person was like John Alt and maybe Rod Smith, you know, and those guys were way before my time to go outside of the Minnesota borders, play at a big-time school, and then make it
to the NFL.
And those guys were ranked a lot higher than I was coming out of high school. And so the people asked me about that. People asked about, you know, being on Nebraska during that magical run, what it's like to really be in the league, what it's like to grow up with a famous father, what's it like, you know, before, during, and after, you know, college, NFL, and all that stuff. And so I felt like, you know, I'm a true picture of what the NFL is. You know, the NFL on TV is about 20 guys. You know, you had, you know, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham Jr., Aaron Rodgers, Brady, and all those guys.
In between there and the rest of the world.
You know, from those 20 guys and all, you know, 1,100 other, there's a lot of Jay Foremans in there. And that's what really always felt like there hasn't been a book or a lot of interviews about really what makes the league go. And so I felt like that, you know, it was a good time. You know, it worked out pretty well. I had time on my hands, and, you know, it came out pretty well. You know, and, you know, I'm not trying to be Stephen King or anything like that, but, you know, it worked out pretty well. And I go around and speak to different high schools, colleges, corporations and stuff. So, you know, I'm still going to be around the same speech, but now that I got a book, I'm an expert. So it kind of, you know, goes hand in hand.
When we come back, we'll ask Jay about what it's like and how difficult it is to get out of the game that he loves. Stay with us on Sports.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back, Jay Foreman in the studio. So, Jay, from Nebraska, you get drafted into the NFL.
Yep.
What's it like the first, as we head towards training camp this week, what's the first training camp like for a rookie?
It's scary. Just because, you know, you're in a, I wouldn't say a controlled environment at college, but you're used to who you're going against at, you know, in practice. You're actually used to who you're going against in the game.
No, just like high school, you become confident again, right?
And you're one of the big dogs. Yeah, you're one of the big dogs. And you're a veteran, so you know, when the meeting starts, you know the defense, you know everything. And then when you go to the pros, you already know showing up, you're playing against the best of the best. And I went to Buffalo where they had, you know, Bruce Smith is a Hall of Fame player. Reuben Brown will be a Hall of Fame player. Ted Washington, Thurman Thomas.
Was Gerald Talley there yet?
He just had left.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, I think he was with the Vikings.
Yeah.
You know, Andre Reed.
Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly just left that year, but we had Doug Flutie. So we had star power, great players, stable organization, playoff team. And so here you go as a fifth-round pick where they got Sam Cowart, who was just drafted the year before, AFC Defensive Rookie of the Year, and John Hollisick. So I'm like, hey, where do I fit in? And it's definitely a challenge. And it's a long drive to training camp when you're driving by yourself as a 22-year-old versus driving down to Nebraska as an 18-year-old with your dad, you know, kind of showing you the way. Now you're kind of, you know, the little bird has left the nest. Now you got to go survive on your own. And then it's a unique experience because it tests everything that you thought you had, and then you got to find some more. And then once you find it, then you got to look for something else to take you to, you know, just
where do you find it?
You got to find it within yourself. I mean, it takes, you know, it's a lot of sacrifice. You got
You watch this show Hard Knocks, and it's right. just fascinating, and I'm sure you relate to it well.
Yeah.
I mean, insecurity that players, and if you're a fifth-round pick, you're right there in that middle, aren't you, where they obviously think you're good.
Right.
To go five is big, but they also, there have been fifth-rounders that get cut or never see the field.
Yeah, and it's every play is evaluated. Every play could be your last play. You could get cut, you know. You could be on practice squad. Yeah, you got drafted in the fifth round, but there's no spot for you to start. So essentially, if you're not starting there, you don't have a lot of job security. And there is uncertainty. I mean, I remember, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, my suite mate, you know, in the dorms, packed up and left. 2 o'clock in the morning.
He was just sick of it?
He knew he couldn't make it.
Quit. He said, that's it, huh?
He said, I'm out of here. Packed his stuff up and was gone.
What was Marv Levy like?
We had Wade Phillips. And
so they already did Wade Phillips then, huh?
Wade Phillips, and we had John Butler, who was a great GM. So, you know, the one thing about getting drafted at the Buffalo, even though I didn't come in and start right away as a rookie, is that they told us as rookies, you're going to get a lot of reps during the preseason, a lot of reps. So if you don't make it here, you're going to have plenty of options to go other places. But if you're on our practice squad, we promote within. So that gives you a lot of – that gives you some security. You know, where teams, you know, aren't bringing guys in, you know, five different teams for a week, and then, you know, the bottom of the roster is constant turnover. You never see an organization that really does that on a consistent basis, besides maybe New England that does that, but they don't do it that much, that goes on and wins. And so I was in a good situation there, got on the field early because of injury, another opportunity, knocked it out of the ballpark, and I learned from Sam Cowart, took my lumps a little bit as a rookie, established myself as a special teams player, which was really good because, you know, I was a really, you know, in Nebraska, we were big, thick guys, heavy squats.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, straightforward, you know, beat you up type
of. Corn-fed Cornhuskers
right,
for the line and, you know.
Big barrel-chested. So when you're playing the league, you got to keep your same strength, but you got to lean up a little bit. So as I was, you know, getting used to that, a different weight program too. More of, you know, rest your body, rest your muscles, you know, don't want you to get hurt, don't over-exaggerate, you know, exert yourself. I was running down on special teams, but then I started to really, you know, catch my second wind in a different weight program, lean up a little bit, and then when I got on the field, I was ready to go. And so, you know, I was in a good situation there again, and, you know, got that opportunity and never stepped off the field until I got, you know, injured, and that was 7 years later, so. It was a good experience, but I had tons of veteran leadership that showed us how to be a pro, how to study, eat right, you know, concentrate outside of football, you know, don't go out too much. This have fun, but don't have too much fun because come Sunday, we got to win. Mm-hmm. And we had a great coach where Wade let the veterans teach the younger guys. And so we were building, you know, depth. You got to think, you know, Pat Williams was on second team with me.
Pat Williams on that team, huh?
Yeah, second team with me.
He couldn't crack it.
Well, he was behind Ted Washington.
Yeah. Who's going to move Ted
up? But Pat worked his way in, and then they made special packages for him. And then he ended up starting, and then, you know, rest is history. But you got to think, you know, our second team was me, Keith Newman, who played here for a couple of years, Pat Williams, Marcellus Wiley.
Marcellus was the second team.
Yeah, second team. You're playing behind Bruce Smith.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, you got to wait your turn.
When we come back, I want to ask Jay about whether he worries about concussions and symptoms like that. Stay with us on WCCO Sports to the Max. Jay Foreman in studio, fun stuff we're talking about. Jay, are you concerned about concussions and the after effects and whether it could affect you, your father, having both played in the NFL? Do you see any symptoms? Do you have concerns about it for yourself in the game?
Yeah. I mean, I live with, you know, some stuff right now, so it's
What kind of stuff?
I mean, you got the, you know, I get headaches quite often.
And you don't know, though. I mean, it could be something completely different, but that certainly goes through your mind.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I've had enough tests. I know it's concussion related. So it's, you know, the symptoms that, you know, you track them. I have a good wife where she kind of, you know, is at every doctor's appointment. So she, you know, gives an honest assessment and can see things that I don't see because you don't see within yourself. And that's the hardest part. It's like, you know, you're a different person, you know, and... You know, I worry about it with my dad just because they didn't nearly have the type of helmet that I had.
Plus, you had longer training camps. You had longer training camps than they have today.
Yeah, and I was just, you know what, I was just brought one of my helmets out of storage, and I was looking at it, and I had two of those, like, air pocket things in to try to protect me, and it just still didn't work. And, you know, it's a part of the game, but see, back then, it was almost like, you know, a term like it was like your made it moment when you knocked yourself out or knocked somebody out.
Badge
and you
on,
had
right?
to go back in there. You know,
and you did. Was, and you didn't even remember what happened after, but you did.
Right,
yeah.
And that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, I got knocked out the first play I ever played in the NFL in the regular season game. Went down on a wedge and hit the wedge and run it to the wrong sideline and was knocked out. You know,
those kickoff teams are some violent.
Right, and
ways
that was
to
when they had a true wedge. You know, 4 or 5 guy wedge, and they want two guys in there to go in there and knock the wedge.
You were it, huh?
Rookie. You know, Bruce DeHaven, you know, rest in peace, would send the rookie
down
there.
Yeah, he just passed, didn't he?
And he was, you know, I was so excited just to play, you know, wanted to run down there and obviously make a name for myself, and you hit the wedge, and you can't, you know, as a rookie, you got to earn your stripes. And the first play, I got knocked out. But, yeah, I mean, I worry about it, but it's something that, you know, you can't control. There's no cure for it. It's something that's going to, you know, progress. And so, you know, what can you do? You know?
When training camp comes around like it will next week, I hear a lot of players say that their body clock still tells them years after that it's time to go.
Yeah.
And there's something missing if you're not going. Do you still feel it?
Yeah, you know it's football time. You know it's training camp and football time, and then when it's playoff time.
Did you enjoy training camp?
Oh, yeah, I liked it. I liked it because I always felt like I wanted to see where I was. I wanted to see if the things that I worked on in the offseason, you know, came, you know, to fruition.
Did you like the meetings and all that went into that?
No, I always felt like training camp meetings were about 2 or 3 hours too
kind
long.
Kind of there to make sure that you guys, because you had nothing else to do,
I'm thinking like, man, you worked there so hard, I just want to go home and get away from you guys. And we keep going over the same thing. And sometimes it becomes overload and guys get bored and guys lose attention to detail. I think if they cut training camp back about 2 weeks, kept the same amount of games, I think you would see better product early in the season from teams that don't start off as well. And, you know, those first 2 weeks where they just, you know, beat each other up, and now they do like the, you know, practices against the other team. I mean, that doesn't do anything for me. I don't need to practice against you. I want to practice and then play the games. I want to be in the highest pressure environment. I want to put everybody in that position, in that high pressure environment, with as little of, you know, tape, game plan and that, and see who can really play football. And that's what I think they take away from it by doing all these scrimmages.
When you talk about being a thinking man's player, how much does a great intellect help you stay in the league? Is it really important, or is it just semi-important and they can teach most guys who are athletic to do what they need to do?
It's probably the most important. Because I looked at a guy like, being a fifth-round draft choice, looked at Zach Thomas. When you look at him, same position, but now he Jimmy Johnson drafted him, threw him in there right away. But when you look at him and look at his stats and you compare it to, you know, all the times that Ray Lewis went to this Pro Bowl, you like, that dude's right up there, or maybe a lot of times better. So, but what did he know? He knew the game. He was smarter, so he didn't have to really take on a lot of blocks. He knew the plays. And so that's what's really helped me is like, you know, if I was a step slower, a step and a half slower, or half a step slower, quickness was never a problem. You know, with me, I was always quick, and I can anticipate, but I could anticipate and play to more to my strengths because of my knowledge of the game.
Who is Tom Osborne in your life?
He's, you know, a second father figure.
Is he a CEO type?
Did
you get a lot out of him?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell you, he was hard on us.
And by the way, you guys won a national championship.
Yeah, won three.
Yeah,
it was hard on us, but fair. And he's a CEO, and this is where I always tell people, Coach Osborne, if he wanted to go out and build, you know, a great business, he could do it. Because here's what he sets the foundation. Everybody knows where they stand, and he lets people go out and take their culture or whatever their message would be, whether it's, you know, in their business, or which would be Nebraska, and go sell it the way you want to sell it. And then he lets the coaches coach, and he let the coaches recruit their type of players for the foundation and the type of offense and defense he wanted to run. So you're going out and recruiting all the running backs that you want, because you're going to know how he's going to fit into our offense, offensive line.
He allows you to do that.
Yeah. And then he knew how to develop players. He knew how to challenge people mentally. I write about in my book that he knew what buttons to push with me without even talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
He could get a message to me through a third person, and he knew I would never forget. Never forget.
When we come back, we'll finish up Jay Foreman in studio. Welcome back, Mike Max, Jay Foreman. We're just talking about some of the psychology that coaches use. Do you think great coaches always know the effect that what they say has?
They should. I think great coaches know how to reach every player the way that they need to be reached. Some guys need constant encouragement. Yep. Some guys need to be always have that finger on them. And some guys know you can say one thing, and that's all you need to say, and he'll be ready to go. Coach Osborne and another coach named Reggie Herring, who is still coaching out at Denver. He coached Denver when they won the Super Bowl. He's still out there. He's a linebacker coach. Reggie took me to mentally, as far as, you know, being a crazy man, to a whole nother level. He knew, he never let me feel like I was playing my best. But I always seek that from him. You know what I mean?
He always, to win his approval.
He always respected me. But it was always like, oh, well, you know, you had a great game. You had 22 tackles. But you remember this one play? You got your butt kicked. And it would highlight it. And then he would know, you know, how to, you know, jam me up a little bit.
Okay, Wade Phillips coached in Buffalo. So yeah. He's a defensive coordinator when they win the Super Bowl in Denver.
Right.
And I was told by someone that knows, they said, they come out the second half. And, you know, Carolina's supposed to win that game, remember? And he sees the first series. So he knows how they've adjusted to their defense.
Right.
And he goes to the head coach, Kubiak, and he says, do whatever you want. They will not score a touchdown on us.
Right.
Based on just what he saw their adjustments were. He said,
right,
however you want to take shots on offense, go ahead. But he said, I can guarantee you this. At best, they can get a field goal on us, and that's it.
Right.
Is that how smart those guys are once
some
they
of them.
Yeah.
Some of them. And the reason why is because Wade instills so much confidence in his players, because he puts – the funny thing about Wade and Coach Belichick, they'll tell you, I'm going to put you in a position to be successful. I'm going to play to your strengths. 95% of the coaches in the NFL, they'll just focus on your weaknesses. Do you ever hear a coach talk about all this, what he can do? And just in the draft, 80% of it is what they can do.
Well, you know, I was told when they picked up Michael Floyd from Arizona, that they brought him into the room. They said, you have run, I can't remember what it was, like 32 different routes this year. You run 7 of them well.
Right.
Those are the only 7 we'll ever ask you to run.
Right. Hey, why make you do something that you can't do? That's the way
it is. And that's what they did well.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Hey, you're a pass rusher, go get the quarterback. You play this, do that. And guys love playing for him because he never puts you in a bad position. And not 80% of the coaches do that all the time.
What's it like now to be part of Nebraska Nation? How big is it? How big is Cornhusker football if you live it and you were on a three national championship team?
It's huge. It's kind of like my dad with the Vikings.
Yeah, same kind of feel.
You know, to be honest with you, Nebraska saved my football life, because after I retired, I hated football.
Did you?
Didn't watch it. Hated how I retired.
Not unusual, by the way, right?
Oh, everybody goes through that. And
didn't want to watch it.
Didn't want to watch it. I did one kind of call-in segment. People loved it. They were, you know, emailing this and this. And then I said, okay, let me start watching the game. Then I started seeing how people remembered me, but then appreciated what I did. And then I started watching it from more of a fan standpoint, and just kind of Nebraska. It just brought back all the reasons why I went to Nebraska and why I like the fans. And then it really, you know, I enjoy watching football all the time now.
Now you live in Lincoln.
Yeah, live in Lincoln. Definitely mobile during the football season. But, you know, I love it. And, you know, I just hope by the time I'm 60, Nebraska can win a Big Ten championship and be in the national title hunt.
They got Rick Spielman's son to go down there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And he's doing well, doing really well. He's a good kid. They're making a role for him.
You like Riley as a coach?
I do. I do like him. I think he's starting to kind of mold his staff to really be really competitive. He's definitely recruiting. I like that he likes Nebraska. We haven't had that in 15 years.
Pelini didn't?
He liked Nebraska, but he couldn't sell Nebraska. Mike Riley can come from the West Coast and sell in the middle of the country. And it's the same place.
Mm-hmm.
With less, what he has more resources, but less players.
Gotcha. Jay Foreman, good stuff. What's the name of the book?
Iron Will. And it's just, it covers a whole bunch of bases. So if you're a high school coach, kid, college kid, corporate person, it's a good read.
Jay Foreman at WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.